You're listening to a podcast from Jubilee Church, Farnham. To find out more, visit www.jubilee.church.
Good morning. Just before I start what I was going to say, do you love Jesus? I mean, he is so lovable. I mean, he is the human being that is beyond every human being. He's the only God. But as he lived amongst us, he was one fabulous person. I mean, he was good, he was loving, he fought injustice, he was a great friend to the disciples, he gave of himself to people, he didn't get caught up in all the wrong stuff, but got caught up in all the right stuff. He is wonderful. And we can really love him with confidence. The more we get to know him, the more I've got to know him over decades now, he's become more and more wonderful, more and more delightful, more and more somebody who I want to be like, more and more somebody who I want to follow. More and more somebody who I think has got something to say to our world. And I just felt in the worship, just this might be for somebody, just that passage from the end of John's Gospel where he's talking to Simon Peter. And it says, they'd finished eating and Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He's been with his mates and work colleagues, just if you read the bit before. And he says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said, feed my lambs. And again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said, take care of my sheep. And a third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? At this point, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. And I just feel that God would say to us this morning, do you love me? Or do other things distract you? Do other things get in the way? He wasn't insecure when Jesus was asking this. He was just wanting Peter to really get it straight. That I am somebody that you can love. And that I'm somebody who it's good to love and whom you can follow. And I think Jesus is saying to us, do you know what? Do you love me? Because I think he would call us to love him more and more. And we want to love him more and more. And we want to know him more and more. And that's nothing to do with my message this morning, but I just feel is a context, really, for what I'm going to say. Because I think he is really, really for you and really, really loves you and is really, really good and is really, really delightful. And he wants to be in relationship with us and wants us to become more and more like him. And it's a challenge, isn't it? He challenges us. Do you love me? Or have other things got in the way? He says again, do you love me? And we say, yeah, I do. But, you know, you don't know half of it. I've got kids to bring up or I've got a job to hold down. Or he says, no, do you love me? Don't worry about that. Do you love me? And I think that's a word for us this morning. I could like stop there as the word today. However, I've got another word. And because we're continuing on our little journey that we've called Together for Purpose. And today I want to build on what Rick preached on the week before last and my message last week. And we've entitled it Together for Purpose because I think it sort of captures something of a change I want to suggest to how we do small groups and stuff midweek and stuff in the church as well. So I'm going to come on to that later. But Rick painted a wonderful picture of how right from the beginning, God's agenda has been to bring his people together for a purpose. Right through the scriptures we see it. It's through the whole of the Old Testament and New Testament. You see, God's heart isn't for disunity or division, but for unity and togetherness. That's the God we worship. He brings people together in love and in togetherness and for a purpose. And last week I tried to focus, well, I did focus on the passage from Hebrews. I think it'd be great to read it again because it's so wonderful. So read it to me. Therefore, they're wonderful verses, aren't they? And it's great for us to read them to each other like that. I think it's good to read the scriptures together. And what I tried to show last time was that togetherness is part of God's design, if you remember. If you weren't here last week, you can listen to it online. Togetherness is good for you. It is good for you. Thirdly, togetherness is really what the world is looking for. That sense of connection and community and unconditional love. It's what the world's looking for. And fourthly, the fourth point was that togetherness is where we meet God, actually. It's where we find him. When two or three are gathered in his name, he can't help but be part of that because he loves coming to be with us. In a mysterious way, he is together with us. And today I want to add on two other points, really. One is that togetherness is where we grow as disciples, and also togetherness is where we grow other disciples. So that's the two points that I want to make today. Togetherness is where we grow as disciples, and togetherness is where we grow other disciples. Our church mission statement is this, we know it, don't we? Hopefully, to build a church of 600 world-changing disciples in order to glorify God and make him known. And we always say in that, every word counts. The words to build points to us being intentional. You have to do something. A church is about building, it's about doing something. The words church of 600 points to coming together, not as a group of friends or a social club, but coming together with a purpose, for a purpose. It doesn't matter about the 600, but it's a coming together of people for a purpose. The world-changing disciples point to the purpose of our coming together, and that is to make disciples who make a difference in the world. To those around them in the world. And the words, in order to glorify God and make him known, are really the results of our coming together with that purpose, to be disciples of Jesus and to make others, help others be disciples of Jesus. That's the results, if you like. And over my sabbatical, I just really dwelt on this whole area of discipleship and being world-changing disciples and making disciples that make other disciples. Found it a fascinating personal journey. Having been a disciple for 40-odd years, it's good to step back and reflect on it some more. And it's interesting, just, you know, the word discipleship actually doesn't occur in the Bible. That would shock me. The word disciple does, although the word disciple is only actually in the Gospels and the Book of Acts. Paul doesn't use it. He actually uses the word saints or brothers or believers. And the term discipleship, even just that word, is a little bit ambiguous, even in the English. It can mean my discipleship, how I grow as a disciple. It can mean that sense of me knowing Jesus and trusting him and learning from him and following him. My discipleship. But it can also mean the activity of helping others be disciples. It's got both of those meanings in that word, actually. That we, as Christians, are involved in helping others learn from him and grow in him and develop in him. It's got both of those meanings in it. To complicate it even further, to make disciples can mean different things as well. It can have that sense of meaning that is preaching the gospel so that people become Christians. And thus disciples, if you read Acts 14, it says this, when they preached the gospel in that city and made disciples, they returned to Listeria. See, make disciples in that context is preaching the gospel in a way that somebody responds to Christ. But it can also mean that whole process it is of being a Christian. The process of conversion and baptism and teaching the ways of the Lord, as it's used in Matthew 28, that we have on our stage each day. Go, therefore, and make disciples. In that context, it's baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you, Jesus is saying. It's an ongoing being disciples throughout their lives. It's a long process. It's a lifelong process. So making disciples can mean seeing people come to faith, but it also has that ongoing journey that we are all on, doesn't it? As disciples, baptized, and then spend a whole lifetime getting to know him better, being shaped by him, learning to follow him, being more in step with him, obeying what he said. And that's what the verb disciple in the New Testament includes. It's all of those aspects. And a verb is a doing word, if I remember my grammar, that I don't very much, but it involves action, doesn't it? To make disciples, it involves actions. It's an intentionality about it, both in the sense of my discipleship, me being a follower of Jesus, but also to me pointing others to Jesus and helping them in their discipleship. Does that make sense? You see, we're all to be lifelong learners about Jesus. And that's why you've got to get it really clear in your heart that he is a good person to follow, that he is a good shepherd, that there's no any suspicion that he isn't good. We need to get out of our souls, otherwise we won't follow him. But if he's utterly good, utterly loving, why not follow him? And why not do as he says? So the key question, I think, is how should that happen? And at the conversion of people, or when somebody goes from being an unbeliever to a believer, really, it should happen everywhere, shouldn't it? In all situations. You know, we can get into a danger of thinking that happens on Alpha, or that happens at some special service or conference. But the reality is the disciples were the whole time sharing their experience of Jesus with others that they met at work or at home or at the street or whatever. So that sense of helping others become disciples can happen everywhere, can't it? And may God it happen more and more in more and more places. May we even be surprised that we find ourselves in conversations with folks where they want to become to faith because of what we've shared about Jesus and our love of Jesus, our passion for him. But as far as training disciples who've already become Christians, that also, do you know, what happens in lots of different places? That sense of us becoming mature, growing, that sense of maturity in the faith, it happens in many places. You just read the scriptures. You see it. Titus 2, it says, older women, train the younger women. 2 Timothy 2 says, Paul trained Timothy to train others to train others. Ephesians 6, 4 says, fathers are to train their children. Hebrews 3, we've just been looking at our verse. All Christians are exhorted to each day to avoid sin and stir each other up to good works. 1 Peter 4, 10 says, all Christians should use their gifts to serve others, to help others grow, to be spurred on in the faith. Acts 18, you see Priscilla and Aquila explaining the ways of God to Apollos. You see it happening everywhere, that it's together that God's people meet for a purpose, to spur each other on in the faith. We can't do it on our own. We can't do it in a solitary way. We need each other to stir each other up. I need you to encourage me. Rick's always encouraging me. I love it. All of us need to be encouraging one another, spurring each other on in the gospel. And so I want to suggest that the purpose of our togetherness is two things: to personally grow as disciples and to help others be better disciples. Does that make sense? And in order to glorify God and make him known, we have to do that. And don't we want to glorify him and make him known? I do. Because people are longing for somebody to love them. Somebody to follow who's not going to let them down. Somebody who is going to direct them through dark places. Somebody who's going to bring alive springs of life to people. So I want us to be disciples as we go into this next season that Jesus is pleased with. And every Christian, in a myriad of small ways, said and unsaid, can be helping unbelievers move towards becoming believers. Every little act of kindness, every little positive comment, every little encouragement is a way that we help people move towards being believers in Jesus. As we share our stories, as we just share about our love of the Lord, do you know what? It has an impact on others. And every one of us in a myriad of small ways should also be helping other believers grow and be intentional about it. Hebrews says, consider how to spur one another. Be thoughtful about it. How can we spur one another on? How can we encourage one another? How can we be Christians who are really intentional about making our kids into disciples? Making our friends, encouraging our friends. And I suppose the challenge is also, as Christians, is who are we seeking to help us in our growth as Christians? Does that make sense? Are we just doing it ourselves? Or are we actually putting ourselves with other people? Are we helped by other people? Are we allowing other people to help us and spur us on in the faith? And I think every church has got to work out how to do this, and we're trying to work out that continually, how to do that. You see, we're all learners. We all are lifelong learners. The word for disciple in Greek literally means learner. And what it points to is that those who follow Jesus orientate their lives around becoming lifelong learners of Jesus. It's not something that happened when we were baptized or when we became a Christian, but we carry on wanting to be those who are better followers of Jesus. We're lifelong learners of Jesus. Get that in your minds today. That's a key phrase. We are lifelong learners of Jesus. Don't we always, learning and growing is so important, isn't it, anyway? I mean, it is really important. Einstein said, once you stop learning, you start dying. That's a great quote. We always want to be learning, don't we? We always want to be learning about Jesus. And learning's not about school or academic qualifications. For some, school wasn't a good experience. Put my hand up. It's not about getting qualifications. Acts says that the disciples were unschooled men. It's not just about knowing Bible facts. I know some people who know a lot of Bible facts, but do you know what? They don't actually represent Jesus very well. You see, learning, growing, being a lifelong learner is as much about character, behavior, our attitudes, our actions, as it is about what we know in our head. I remember going to theological college and spending years studying doctrines. And then I go to my mother-in-law, who just prays, left school at 14, and I'd say, oh, we've just been thinking about this. And she'd say, oh, have you thought about that? And she, in a sentence, would like summarize, like encyclopedias, because she knew Jesus and she walks with him. And as a young guy, I thought, you know what, we can get caught up with what we know and lose the fact that we're trying to know somebody in the Lord Jesus. So it's not about education in that sense, but it's about learning and growing and developing as people. And isn't that what we want to do? You know, those who want to become more and more immature, or those who want to grow less and less, apart from me in certain areas where I do want to grow less and less, as it were, but that's another whole story. We want to be developing, don't we? Improving, growing, maturing. Don't want to be those who are going the other way. I laughed at the recent baptism when Rick was talking about baptism and this idea of baptism being dying and then rising again. It was a wonderful picture, isn't it, of baptism going into the water and out. And there's a sense, isn't it, when we become a Christian, we die. We don't talk about that so much these days. Perhaps we should talk about it more, because we do die. We die to an old way of life and we're born again into a new way of life. That's the whole point. We die and we rise again into a new way of life. It's not that we become like another person. It's really that the stuff that makes us less us or spoils us is what we try and die to. And the stuff that makes us more us, more the person that Jesus created us to be, emerges. So it's not like we die and become another person. It's actually we die and become the person that he intended us to be. And isn't that a lifelong process? Doesn't happen overnight. Doesn't happen in just a twinkle of an eye. It happens as a process over our lifetime. And for Christians, it's a lifelong process. We're lifelong learners about Jesus and who he is and what he taught and how he had dealt with people. And you know what? We have to be happy to follow him. We have to really get it in our hearts that he's worth following. Because there's lots of in this world that would seek us to, would encourage us to follow it, whatever it is. But he says, follow me. He says, I want you to be followers of me. And that's a lifelong pursuit, isn't it? It doesn't happen overnight. But do you know what? The Holy Spirit, in a mysterious way, causes us to become more and more like him. More and more representing him. More and more like his character. And do you know what? That does us good. That is good for us. And it's something that we need to be intentional about. Something that we want to take seriously. Something that we want to really consider. And to consider how to bring that out in other people. Educators and trainers talk about three different ways of learning, receiving information and being apprenticed and learning by immersion. And those things happen, don't they? We see it so often. We see it for the disciples. He had gathered his 12 together. He definitely taught them stuff about the faith. But he also got alongside them and apprenticed them, showed them how to behave and how to live. He was so good at the, you know, watch me. Now you have a go, now get on with it. I mean, that was the sort of guy he was. He was a trainer. He was somebody who wanted to apprentice people, wanted to see them develop. But we also see how he shared his life with the others. And the disciples learnt tons just being with him, watching him pray, watching him deal with people, seeing the compassion in his eyes when he was healing the sick or when the woman was caught in adultery. Wouldn't you just love to have been in that moment as they were with him in that moment? They learned something, didn't they? His willingness to actually make a whip to clear the temple. That really troubled me when I first read that. He made a whip? That shakes my view of who Jesus was. He didn't like injustice, you see. He didn't like things to be not right. Learned a whole nother bit of character about Jesus in that little moment when I read that. But he was there when, well, they were there when he ate and when he laughed and when he cried and when he danced and when he was just doing stuff. They were with him and they learned tons just being with him. And do you know what we learn from being with one another, don't we? With those who are longer in the faith than us. I love going around to Keg and Doreen's. They've been on the journey longer than I have. And I just love being with them, learning from them. Being inspired by them, thinking when they're on their age, I want to be like them. Doesn't that do something to us? We learn something, don't we? As we are with people who are a bit beyond us in the faith. So often I say, I get ribbed by it about it a lot, that life's a journey. But it is, isn't it? It's a journey. And we have to make it a good journey as we follow Jesus. We're born again as Christians. We start this journey, a lifelong journey with Jesus, a lifelong pursuit. And as we gather with others, that is our purpose together as a church, to spur each other on in the faith, to encourage one another in the faith, to help us be better disciples of Jesus. Do you get that? So it's not somebody else's responsibility. It's our responsibility for our own personal journey. But we also have a responsibility to help others on their personal journey. It works both ways, doesn't it? That's what being together is all about. See, when we become a Christian, we're immediately justified, forgiven, free from condemnation, going to heaven, have made our peace with our Maker. Everything's done when we become a Christian. And yet, it's also just beginning. This journey is just beginning, where we are being sanctified, as the theologians call it, gradually becoming more and more like the person of Jesus. And more the person that Jesus intended us to be. Our gradual becoming more and more like Jesus. That's what discipleship's all about. That's what being a lifelong learner is all about. But it's also a journey to help others in their lifelong journey. Are you getting this? I've said it now probably 4 or 5 times, but hopefully you're getting it. And over my sabbatical, I was just looking at this whole area afresh, thinking, how do we make disciples that make disciples? Especially the next generation that's emerging. And how do we develop leaders and elders, and how do we develop people? And these things are connected in my mind. Jesus says, go and make disciples. But the challenge is, how do we do it in our generation? How do we do it in a post-Christian country? How, as you look at the books, got tens of books, often it will look at just on discipleship. Look at the spiritual disciplines, prayer, Bible reading, fellowship, worship, confession, solitude, silence. Haley loves that one. Fasting, I don't like that one. There's all sorts of disciplines that we have to have as Christians, as part of our journey. But do you know what? More than anything, it's about us being intentional, and it's about us being intentional with others, helping them to being together for purpose. And as I reflected more and more on discipleship and making disciples and developing leaders who will make disciples, something became very clear to me. When Jesus said, go and make disciples, he wasn't just talking to the apostles. He wasn't just talking to pastors. He wasn't just talking to growth group leaders or those who are responsible for things in the church. He was actually commissioning all of us to go and make disciples. That is a profound thing. So it's not just Rick and my job or our growth group job, leader's job. It's, do you know what it is? All of our job to help one another be disciples. If you're a follower of Jesus, part of the deal is to invite others to be disciples, and to help them on their journey of being disciples. In fact, you know what? When we stand before him, when we die, and we are giving account of our lives, I just wonder whether it might be one of his key questions. He probably won't be so interested in how much money we made, or unless you sort of make it to invest in the kingdom, then he'll just be so thrilled. It won't how many friends you've got on Facebook or LinkedIn. It won't be what your job title is. It's going to be more likely to be, were you wholeheartedly in love with me? Did you love others as you love yourself? And how did you get on with the commission I gave you? How many disciples have you made? How have you influenced others on their journey? Was that a good influence? You see, the big idea for me is this, that we all grow best by making disciples. If you want to grow as a Christian, mature as a Christian, you do that best by helping others grow as disciples. That is a big thought. If you're thinking, do you know what, I've been a Christian decades and I feel like I've made 20 steps. Help someone else become a disciple. Help someone else grow as a disciple and you'll find yourself increasing the rate of growth that you have as a disciple. See, wherever you are on your journey of faith, the best way to grow is to make disciples. If you are a brand new Christian here, you can tell your story to others who haven't yet met Jesus. And that's making disciples. If you've been a Christian, just been baptized, do you know what? You can encourage those who haven't been baptized to be baptized. If you've been a Christian for a few years, you can make disciples of those who've just been baptized because you know more than them. You've been on the journey longer. You've got something to offer them. If you've got kids, the best way of growing as a disciple is helping them grow as disciples because they ask really tricky questions. Parents will know. My kids have asked me way harder questions than people in the church have. And you have to think about them. You have to think, how on earth do I answer that question to this little soul who's wanting to follow Jesus? I usually ask Hayley because she usually has much better answers. So feel free, she's not here, I won't get into trouble. Just ask her if she's got any, your kids have got any questions. You see, the best way to grow is to grow others. Are you catching this? This is why we're together for a purpose. We make disciples in our friends, with our families. But you know what? For many of us, there's that little thing that says, I can't do that. And I think God is calling us to snip off that tee and to say, do you know what? I can do that. I have got something to offer others on their journey. And do you know what? It might be just little small ways, little small acts, little small encouragements, little small challenges, little reminders of God's goodness to somebody else, a little prayer when somebody's down, a little Bible verse that you've texted somebody, a little way that you have done something to encourage somebody, to spur them on in their faith, is what I'm talking about. You don't have to have degrees. You don't have to be doing a master's like Rick. You know, he showed me a picture this week of his bed when he was away at college. He's trying to get his head around about four verses, and he had about 25 books on his bed. We don't all have to do that. Thank God that he's doing it. And sometimes we can say, I can't do that. I'm not like Rick, or I'm not like Sean, I'm not like Mike, you know, and we can write ourselves off. But you know what God is saying to us? Don't write yourselves off, because we are all called to encourage one another, to spur one another on, to say something encouraging. And it's a whole myriad of small little things. It's not some big, momentous task that we've got to do. We're not going to help our, you know, kids learn the whole of the scriptures word for word. You know, I can't do that. It's small little things. It's the small little verse that Hayley writes on the chalkboard in our kitchen that we just sort of say every now and then to each other in the kitchen. It's little way, little choices we make. For every, you know, that a kid's party and Blaze, you know, we convince them that Blaze is going to be better fun. There's all sorts of things, little choices we make as well. How we spur one another, how on, we encourage one another. This is how we make disciples. Are you following? So today's challenge, how is my lifelong learning going? How is my personal discipleship? And how is my discipling of others going? It's a challenge for us. And as we come to break bread, I want us to be reflecting on that. But I want to just conclude with just some comments about our growth groups and how we want to sort of see, I want to try something, see whether that will help us in all this that I'm talking about. We've always seen our growth groups as a key place for discipleship. You know, when we gather on a Sunday, hopefully there's some growth and learning, and it's great to be following Jesus together in this context. But you know what? A major growth happens when we're in our growth groups, and it's mainly because some people in our groups wind us up and annoy us. And part of our growing is working out how to work this all out with people, isn't it? It's not about knowing facts. It's about being loving to somebody who is unlovable or seems unlovable to us. It's about working these things out together for purpose. And so our growth groups have always been really important. It's that verse, isn't it, that we've been looking at. Let us hold unswervingly the hope we profess, for he's promised to be faithful. Let us consider how we can spur one another on towards good love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some is in the habit to do, but encouraging one another. That's what it's about. That's what we'd love to do. And just a few years ago, I came across a different approach to small groups in churches. To be honest, that when it was explained to me, I thought it was a real load of rubbish, if I'm honest. I don't get that. That's just a load of rubbish. However, on my sabbatical, I visited Angela Kem's church up in Cambridge, and they had just introduced this same way of doing it. And how they communicated it, do you know what, got my imagination going. And she said, as we talked to her over lunch, that it unleashed an energy and an enthusiasm and a disciple growth like nothing else that has happened in that church. And for those of you who've known Angela, she's been in that church for 4 years, and she does stir churches up to good things. But she says this change is what has actually done something significant to the churches. They were dealing with all sorts of issues: how to develop leaders, how to reach into new areas of the town, how to balance groups and other activity that were going on in the church, how to release the potential of the next generation, how to integrate new believers, how best to connect what people were doing outside of the church with the stuff that was happening in the church, how to harness people's passions and what they were enjoying in the rest of their lives with what they were doing on their journey of faith. They began to question whether one size fits all in their groups. And it's interesting, since that visit, I've just found more and more churches having this different approach. And so I came back and spoke to the elders and thought, you know, we want to try this. In Borden and Aldershot, they don't want to do it. But in Farnham, we're going for it. Good on Rick. And it's just a different way of looking at it, okay? And so it's called Activate. It's based on a book that came out that you might want to look at or not. But the basic principle is this, that rather than small groups be never ending, a bit like a life sentence to growth group leaders, they are set up for a time-limited period. And they can happen in different contexts, often connected with people's passions, at different times, with different focus, can be proposed and led by all sorts of people, but have a focus of making disciples. They gather for a clear purpose, and once a term, people sign up to them on the basis of that purpose and journey with another group of people for 12 weeks. The Cambridge Church sort of launched it, and all sorts of things started coming out. The first were a bunch of guys who wanted to play in a five-a-side football league. And they said, you know what, we don't want group at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. We would love it on a Sunday evening. We'd love to gather together before we go out and do football training. Some businessmen who were on the train up to London said, you know what, we're finding it hard to get home for group. What we would actually like to do is to do it 5:30 at Waterloo Station. Have a little coffee together, do a Bible study, and then get on the train and talk about it on the way home. Somebody else said, I'm in a reading group. I love reading novels. I could see a reading group. I'd love to do that. I could invite some of my mates to a group like that. Someone else had a passion for a particular estate in Cambridge. And they knew the culture in that estate was very different from the culture that the church had. And they knew that the best place to meet would be in the pub. So they set a group up in the pub on that estate because it was culturally relevant. A group of mums then said, you know what, we've got little kids and we're knackered by the evening and we want to really have a group in the daytime where we can bring our kids along to as well. But gather not just for coffee and chat. We want to gather to spur each other on in the faith. Someone else wanted to run an alpha group and they'd asked all their friends and they said, I'm not coming on an evening, but they'd come to lunch. So they're offering lunch in their house and run an alpha group for their mates. That's become their group. The alpha group leaders in Cambridge then said, you know what, we recognize it's hard for alpha, people who've come to faith on alpha to go into groups. We want a group for new Christians. So they started running alpha course one term and then a new Christians group the next term. Are you getting the sort of feel of this? Others really wanted to go deep into the Bible. You know, they're the ones who thought, I want to know what those 20 books Rick had on his bed were. Some people want to go deep, but actually were frustrated with their group because the other people in their group weren't quite in that place. They wanted to have a season going deep into some doctrine. Then it got really creative because the carol service team said, we're struggling to do it, be in a group and to prepare for the carol service. So they decided the whole of the autumn to meet as a carol service group. And they spent the whole time writing the carol service, preparing for it, making it the most best, it was a pantomime, I think they did it, carol service that they've ever been. So for a term, it was purposeful. It was stirring one another on to a good thing. But they didn't have to grapple with this groups versus doing something like that. Others said, you know, I feel I want to just pray for a season. Gather together with other people who just want to pray. Someone else said, do you know what? I love Come Dine With Me. That program, some of you might have seen it. I'd love to just have people around for dinner and go around houses having people for dinner. But in the context of that, us do a Bible study, look at a book together, look at a journey together. The most hilarious and last one I will tell you, because I've got a whole long list, is a young person, I think they were 16, went to the elders and said, I want to run a group, a ukulele learning group. And they said, the elders looked and said, there are lots of questions now for me in this. But you know what? They took a punt on it and a dozen of the church got together. Half the evening, they learnt the ukulele and half the evening, they stirred each other on to good works and love. And it was a cracking group. Now, they had to put some other people alongside this young person and all that sort of stuff. But do you know what? It has unleashed a creativity in that church. And I thought, do you know what? It could be fun in Jubilee to do something like this or try something like this. I talked about it with the growth group leaders a little bit tentatively. What, you know, how is this going to work out? And do you know what? Some great ideas. Cake making. I want to do cake making. We make a cake and whilst it's cooking, we do a Bible study and then we eat it. Is Rebecca here? Where's Rebecca? She's not here. She's not here. She said, you know what, Sean? They live about 20 foot from a pub, the Nelson's Arms. And they said we go there intentionally. I mean, this in honour to them. They go there intentionally on a Monday night, okay, to make friends with the owners of the pub. They've invited the whole of their street to the pub to an event to get to know each other in the community. They said, you know, we want to run a group in that pub where we're not just having a pint and having fun. We're going to do that. But, you know, we want to do Love That Does or something, or purpose-driven life together in that pub as a way of reaching out to our little community. I'm so proud of them. Others, I'd love to do a group for new people new to the church. Do you know what? I'd love to do a parenting course, actually, rather than group this term. I'd love to do a marriage course. The world's our oyster in terms of whatever that means. Is that a phrase?
Yeah.
It is a phrase, isn't it? What on earth does that mean? Don't know. So what I want to pitch to you is to give this some thought. And if as I'm talking, you say, do you know, I'd love to do that. I'd like you to send me an email. If you've got an idea, got a thought, you think, do you know what? I'd love to do this. Send me an email, okay? Because I want to collate them, see what we've got. Don't guarantee we're going to do all of them. If you've got some particular passion that's very niche, or a particular bit of the Bible that is really, really niche, we might not go there. But we are really wanting to be open to everybody to say, what ideas have I got? And do you know what? We might find people coalescing around things in a way that is just very, very exciting for us. Next week, I want to just give some of the other aspects, because there's lots of questions around about pastoral care, those who find it hard to make friends with people and really benefit from a longer-term group. What do we do with our current groups? I know some of the group leaders think, do you know what? I'd like to carry on with my group, and that's cool as well. So geography is an issue. Diversity is an issue. There's all sorts of other issues that we're going to cover somewhat next week. But I'd love you to let me know. Is that all right? You feel a little bit of energy for this? Okay, that's great. Four of you do. I think we'll see. But as we approach the bread and wine, I want us to consider how we can spur one another on. I want us to take stock of our personal walk with the Lord. And I want us to take stock on how we encourage others in their walk with the Lord. Is that all right as we break bread today? So can we stand? I've noticed I've got a little bit excited and gone over time, but we're still going to break bread. But I want us to break bread by reading just this verse once again together. And as we are coming to break bread today, come in the good of the gospel that we have coalesced around and be considerate about what God is saying to us. So I want to give us just a moment. Catherine is going to lead a song. As she's leading a song, I'm going to invite you to come up and take the bread and wine. There'll be people here to serve it. But before she just starts, I want us just to have a moment of quiet and for us to say a simple prayer to God, like, how am I doing on my journey? And who can I encourage this week on their journey? Is that all right? So just in a moment, just offer that prayer to God. As you come to take the bread and wine, why not also think about what you can actually do in response? It might be time to step up and to lead one of these new groups. It might not be. It might be to send a personal encouragement to somebody. It might be to be more intentional to disciple our children. It might be husbands and wives need to say, how do we follow Jesus together? And I'd encourage us all to consider what we can actually do. Because he's worth following. He's worth following. he's worth being a disciple of. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we've confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way opened up to us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God as we come to this breaking of bread with sincere hearts and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. So as we take the bread representing his blood and the body and the wine representing his blood, let's just reflect on what he's done for us. And as we do that, let us respond, giving our hearts to him afresh in this moment of worship, that we would be and commit to him to be even better followers of Jesus this week. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Catherine's going to lead us. Do come forward.